Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. We had Prime Minister's questions today, but the most striking moment of the session did not come from the Prime Minister or anything Jeremy Corbyn said. Instead, it was news relating to the Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, and how he plans to run things. James, what he is suggesting, can you just explain it to us and what it means in terms of procedure going forward?
So right now in a government department, if the Permanent Secretary says, Minister, I really don't think this is a good idea, and the scheme does not represent value for money or is a bad idea, Minister can say, I still want to proceed. At which point, the Permanent Secretary can say, I would like to request a written ministerial direction to that effect. And what that does is put on the record that the Permanent Secretary did not agree with the decision and thought it was a bad idea. What Lindsay Hoyle is saying, that as Speaker, he will give the Clerk of the House of Commons the same power. So if he takes the decision that breaches, that the clerks think goes against either the standing orders of a house or the long-standing conventions of a house, the clerks of the Commons can do that and they can write a letter to the Commons Library explaining their decision. What this is an implicit rebuke of John Bercow, because if you cast your mind back to that kind of pre-election period when the House of Commons was trying to thwart Boris Johnson over Brexit there and before that Theresa May, there was various procedural innovations, I think we could call them, by John Bercow. And the very strong rumours in Westminster was that the clerks had advised against them that Bercow had proceeded anyway. What Lindsay Hoyle is saying is that from now on, if that were to happen, there would be a way for the public and for MPs to know about that and a record of that decision.
Fraser, it seems as though Lindsay Hoyle has changed the way that the Commons work since John Bercow's reign. We now have Prime Minister's questions that last roughly half an hour. Do you think it's a positive thing that, in a way, it's now going to be harder to change from precedent, or at least there'll be greater scrutiny for it?
Oh, massively so. I was actually, I thought that after the Bercow debacle, the whole role of the Speaker would have to change, that the person who runs the House of Commons would have to be separated from the person who chairs debates, and that the powers of the Speaker would have to be constrained by the government. And it's a shame to basically go through all of its constitutional rewriting simply of the misbehaviour of one Speaker, John Bercow, the first, really, to abuse his position and his power in such a way for a long time. But it now seems that this might not be necessary, that Lindsay Hoyle has recognised the damage done to the credibility of Parliament and the chair by his predecessor's behaviour. And if he can come up with these tweaks, I think the very fact that he's trying this demonstrates that he isn't going to be a Bercow-like figure and that wider constitutional change won't be needed. I mean, the funny thing about the House of Commons is so much of it is a little is medieval, you know, with the men in tights and what have you. And that is because these protocols and the unwritten laws and the lack of codification has served our democracy pretty well over the generations. It's yielded the most responsive democracy probably in the Western world. That's why there's not a single populist in this parliament where there are populists in every other parliament of every other EU member state. And it looks like that after Bercow abused the formula, we're now getting back to the status quo ante. And in Lindsay Hoyle, you know, a former Labour MP, you've got somebody who all parties in the House will be able to trust.
Now, away from Westminster into the Scottish Parliament, there's been an interesting debate for discussion today, James. The UK is leaving the EU on Friday and the Scottish Parliament have been discussing flags.
Yes, so what this is the governing body of the Scottish Parliament has said, well, look, because the UK will be no longer part of the EU after the 31st of January and Scotland is part of the UK, the EU flag will no longer fly outside Holyrood, the Scottish Parliament. The SNP, in a kind of classic bit of SNP gesture politics, wanted to carry on flying as a kind of sign that an independent Scotland would rejoin the EU. And so today there's been a very heated debate in the Scottish Parliament about this. You've got, you know, the SNP and the Tories on predictable sides. You've got the Lib Dems saying, well, hang on a second, you know, we are Remainers, but if the Parliament overturns the decision of a governing body, which is meant to be a kind of, you know, meant to be kind of arm's length and non-political, that sends a very bad signal. So it's just another classic example of the way in which the SNP find a way continuously to keep constitutional questions at the fore of Scottish politics rather than focus on their domestic record, which is really nothing to write home about.
Fraser, we've had Nicola Sturgeon send a request to Boris Johnson for a second independence referendum. To no one's surprise, that was denied. Nicola Sturgeon has suggested she is now waiting, biding her time, and she will soon reveal the next steps. Do we have any sense to what the SNP are planning when it comes to pushing the case for independence over the next few months?
Well, they've got various tricks that they can pull. For example, they can have another vote wanting an independence referendum. They last had one in 2017 and it passed. If you get the Greens voting with the SNP, it would pass again. It's a pretty futile vote because the Prime Minister has already said that they're not going to get a referendum. Now, you could also have a consultative referendum. Of course, there's no such thing. This means a pretend one, like the Catalans did. Of course, if you have a pretend referendum, then the unionists simply don't take part in it. I think in the Catalan pretend referendum, you had something like 43% turnout. And while the result was obviously overwhelmingly in favour of Catalonian independence, it had no authority whatsoever. My sense is that Nicola Sturgeon realises she hasn't got long left, a matter of weeks before the Alex Salmond's trial starts. And when that happens, I think it'll be a lot harder for her to lay on stunts like this. And also, let's not forget, the Scottish public opinion does not want another referendum. There was the last poll, I think, had 46% of Scots saying we didn't want one. I think 42% said they did. And in Britain as a whole, it's an even bigger majority. So it's not as if Scotland is chomping at the bit, dying to get another referendum out. The SNP want this, but most Scots simply don't. And the longer they keep on banging on about a cause which most Scots are uninterested in, I think the greater the alienation and the worse it will be for them in the next Holyrood elections.
James, the UK is leaving the EU on Friday and it does complicate the case for Scottish independence to the point that actually some in the SNP seem to openly be admitting this.
Yeah, so Alex Neil is an SNP MSP. Now, he is an unusual beast. He's the only SNP parliamentarian who voted for Brexit or has said that he voted for Brexit. And the piece he's written today, I think, is quite persuasive, which is the SNP has to drop the idea of rejoining the EU, because if that is its position, given the UK government's desire to leave a single market and the customs union, you would be talking about an economic border between Scotland and the rest of the UK. And his view is that that will make independence unsellable in any referendum. And I think while in the, undoubtedly since 2016, Brexit has boosted the SNP's case. They have had this argument that, you know, you were told in 2014 the only way for Scotland to be sure of staying in the EU was to vote no to independence, to stay in the UK, and now the UK has leaving the EU despite the fact that most people in Scotland voted remain. You know, once Brexit happens, it does complicate the case for independence. You know, I don't need to tell you two that, you know, there is a reason why the SNP spent a generation making the case for independence in Europe. And if you think back to that 2014 campaign, Alex Salmond's answer to almost any question about how independence would work would be to say that both Scotland and our UK would be members of the EU and therefore in the single market and in the customs union with no barriers to trade between the two.
Fraser, it feels as though behind the scenes there are some in the SNP who are slightly frustrated at the fact that Sturgeon hasn't done more to, I suppose, position the case for independence, taking into account new circumstances. She's been fairly quiet on details. What do you think the SNP should be doing now? Clearly you don't want independence, but if you were in their shoes.
Well, you know, I do have a hard time putting myself in the SNP's shoes. And as you say, Katie, they are two tribes. I mean, Alec Neil, who we were just talking about, is a great man, a really talented politician. But he has always been what was called, back in the pre-911 days, a fundamentalist, insofar as he wanted to go straight for Scottish independence without skipping devolution. And he thought it was just a trap to ensnare the SNP in the administration of the United Kingdom. So you've always had people like him wanting to just go for it, just skip all this game playing and just make a bid for freedom. And then you've got Nicola Sturgeon, who thinks to herself, well, I have to be pragmatic here. I have got a movement of people who are travelling hopefully, and it's better that they keep on travelling hopefully than arrive, because if I have a referendum and I lose it, then it's going to be game over. It's going to be like the Quebecois. After two referenda, if you fail two of them, it's very difficult to revive the movement. So Nicola Sturgeon wants to keep stringing this along, and she's got so many Scots, many members of my own family now, who are really enthusiastic members. They were radicalised by the brilliant campaign the SNP fought in 2014, and they are kept alive by the idea that independence might be just around the corner. Now, how do you keep them thinking that through the Alex Salmond trial and beyond? You basically do not bring it to a head. You make out as if you're just desperate for a referendum if it wasn't for X, Y, and Z, and you always think of a new X, Y, and Z. Now, that's Nicola Sturgeon's plan. The likes of Alec Neil are growing impatient with it, and I think we can expect these tensions to increase, because, let's face it, you can't keep these people being strung along indefinitely. You would argue, if I was a Scottish nationalist, I would say, look, we've just had Brexit. We've had the UK rest taken away from the EU without the consent of the Scottish people, set aside the fact that 2 in 5 Scots voted for Brexit. But, you know, it's a pretty good casus belli right now. And if you don't seize in this moment, then what moment are you ever going to seize on? So I think Alec Neil is doing the right thing from his point of view, but I also think that Nicola Sturgeon, in stringing people along, is doing the right thing from her point of view.
Now, finally, James, if you speak to a minister, they will tell you that the best way to avoid a second independence referendum in Scotland is to make sure that the SNP don't win an outright majority in the Scottish Parliament elections in 2021. In the build-up to that, we are expecting that the government will soon start to push their pro-union message. There's a campaign planned. What should we look out for?
So I think this drug summit that's going to be held in Glasgow is a sign of what it's going to be. It's attempting to...
Drugs to stop independence.
Well, no, it's attempting to emphasise... emphasise the kind of shared concern in the union. Drugs is also an area where the SNP's domestic record, the government in Scotland's record, is very poor. It's a devolved area. And so I think you'll see that. I think one complication here in terms of the Brexit talks is fishing has to be settled before the 2021 Holyrood elections. If Boris Johnson ends up striking a deal which the Scottish Fishermen's Federation dislikes, for example, that I think will considerably increase the chances of the SNP being able to get that majority in 2021. So I think that is a problem. I think one other thing we're going to see is also an attempt to kind of promote the social union. So something designed to help Scottish students go to English universities. At the moment, if Scottish students go to Scottish universities, they don't pay fees. But if they come south of the border, they do have to pay fees. So something like things like that, I think, and very visible attempts to emphasise the benefits of the union in terms of UK government investment in Scotland.
There's actually quite a lot of mileage in what you might call a union dividend schemes like that. I mean, for example, Scotland is now the worst part of the UK in which to be bright and poor, because your chances of getting into university are far lower in Scotland than they are in the rest of the UK.
Because they're cap on places.
Yeah, that's cap on places. I mean, when you give free, in inverted commas, tuition fees, that means rationing. Rationing means a far shortage of supply. That means far fewer kids get in. And also, tuition fees are a massive subsidy for the middle class. The English system is far fairer. I mean, why should, if you forked out 20 grand a year for a private school, why on earth should the government pick up the bill for your university education? Or even, to be honest, subsidise it to the tune of to a cap of 9 grand. I reckon these guys should pay for every penny of the cost of their education. But that aside, I would quite like a scheme that would actually help these Scots who are denied the opportunity of university education in Scotland to get it in England. And there must be something that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom can do for those deprived of the opportunity by a postcode lottery, by just the fact that they happen to be educated in a Scotland with a deeply regressive education policy.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James.